Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking a bit about local democracy. As always, I'm joined by my co-host and the man who actually told me earlier, Martin, are you actually the Lord Mayor of Ashbourne now at this stage, or is that just an honorary title?
My honorary title is Ashbourne's only trot. Honest to God, I'm not telling you a word of a lie. That's the truth. Listen, I just want to jump in. We need some more patrons on board. All these pods are funded by patrons. And at the moment, Tony needs more trousers. I'm looking at his bare legs at the moment. It's just not a pretty sight. So jump in there and be a patron.
That sound, yeah, no, honest to God, I've got great legs. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by newly elected councillor, Green councillor for Cabra Glass Nevin. Just on the verge of my own electoral area, environmental design specialist, is that fair to say, Nessa?
Yeah.
Nessa Hourigan is here and she's from Limerick, but she's living in Cabra, folks. So, you know,
I'm in Dublin now longer than I ever lived in Limerick. So I'm an honorary dub at this stage.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're more dub than Martin, to be honest.
I have a child actually who is the ultimate dub because she's born on Bloomsday in the Rotunda. So right. I think that's the ultimate pedigree.
I know you. That qualifies you. I think you get to put a sheep on the green or something like that. thanks for coming in. I suppose what picked my interest initially, I know that I've seen some of the stuff on social media with your daughter and these things, but what picked my interest was the most recent changes that we saw, the Phoenix Park, which is a park, and this concrete blob that seems to want to drop into it. Do you want to just give us a bit of a background on that? I know you've spoken about it before, but maybe listeners haven't heard that.
Yeah. Well, actually, that has been a big issue that a lot of people don't realise, that there was a process happening from about March onwards where the OPW have decided or have come together with Fall to Ireland. Now, people might know that the OPW has a stake, or are stakeholders or owners of lots of our historic buildings. So they would often own, you know, our big houses and kind of the areas around them. Mm. And they own and are responsible for the Phoenix Park. Now, the Phoenix Park is one of the oldest and biggest walled parks in Europe. It's very special. And it's a designed space. Mm. So it's not like a totally natural habitat. But what's new about this is that Fall to Ireland has all of a sudden partnered with them, and they produced this thing that they're calling a public information process. Mm. And they produced, a redevelopment document. So to, I suppose, give the context of that document, they went and had a research company. The research company went into the park and asked visitors and asked users of the park what would they like. And then what it seems that they did is they took some of that analysis and they gave it out to 20 or so architects. Hmm. Now, from an architecture background myself, I can tell you that if you ask an architect, what do you think I should do here? They're going to tell you to build. Mm. So unsurprisingly, those 20 architects came up with I think it's about 28 or nearly 30 suggestions for what we could build in the Phoenix Park. And that document was put in the visitor center in the Phoenix Park in March. I think it's over 100 pages. Mm. It was a hard copy, not online. And there was about 3 weeks to respond to it. So that's not ideal. That's not a public consultation, which is why they're not calling it a public consultation, because there are rules around public consultations. It was a public information exercise. And in fairness, there's a brilliant group, the Navan Road Residents Group, caught it, because it wasn't very well publicised, and asked for an extension. And we're, you know, great and really pushy and got an extension on the date. And so that brought us kind of up to around May. Mm. And they got a couple of extensions, in fairness to them. And so it was really hard for people to get to it. And as I said, it's not very publicized. So there was a point kind of around election time, actually, when really I should have been out canvassing, where people didn't realize that this information exercise was happening. How would you like the park to be? Would you like all this building in the park? Would you like, you know, to redevelop it over here and put this over there? We wanted to have some kind of reaction or public, just make people know that it was happening and that it was out there, because it looked like there was very little knowledge of it. And anytime I was mentioning it to people, particularly people who you would think would know, you know, not to put too much of a shine on it, but people in the Green Party would know kind of environmental activists and know kind of people who are interested in planning or good planning and green space. And we'd know people who are involved in, let's say, biodiversity and things like that. And whenever I mentioned it to those kind of key, you know, public people, nobody knew about it. So I was getting increasingly worried about that. And we basically set up like a little web thing where you could submit to the process. I think we got almost 5,000 people to engage with that, which was great. And it all kind of happened in the last week of it. But what it comes down to is this, the fact that Fall to Ireland and the OPW are working in conjunction here. I don't understand how that's happening and when did that happen. And apparently, from what we understand, this development document cost quite a lot to do. It was quite a big investment. If you're going to make that kind of investment, you would think that a public consultation is probably the right way to go. Like, I know we give out in this country about, let's say, look at bus connects and NIMBYism and all this kind of stuff. And actually, I think on one hand, we don't have enough NIMBYs. The problem with NIMBYism in Ireland or with public consultations is that they're quite a narrow group that end up getting involved. And actually they don't go out to kind of vulnerable groups or diverse groups. And our public consultations compared to our European partners can be pretty weak. You know, the time scales can be bad. How you actually interact with people, the public meetings can be bad. A public consultation that's based around a fully costed and designed project is actually not a public consultation. In Europe, when you're doing a public consultation, you start with, hey guys, what would you like? You know, what looks good to you?
Instead of presenting a fait accompli.
Like, I mean, that's part of the problem with Bus Connects, right? Is like, well, how do you think the bus should work? You know, like, not here's the fully costed and designed roads. You say, how do you think the buses should work? So, but I have to say that public consultations do come with rules and those are defined and recognized. And the fact that this is not a public consultation is the first red flag. The first thing.
Can I just ask, just for our listeners, what is the proposal that's on the table for the Phoenix Park?
So there's a number of them. When we drew light to this, the way the OPW would describe it is, oh, you know, there isn't enough pedestrian crossings. There isn't enough toilets. There isn't enough access in terms of cyclists and everything in the park. And so we wanted to upgrade that. And if that was the plan, I would be like, yes, fantastic. Let's do that. Because it's true. Pedestrianism and access to toilets and rest places in the park are really bad. And we need to put some money towards that. But what the document actually says, which is less about those issues and more about retail opportunities and redevelopment of buildings. So, for example, one of the things that they're suggesting is a completely new visitor centre up around the Ashtown Castle area. And they have these images of like a blocked out space. And it's a considerable amount of space. It's a big visitor centre. They want a children's centre and a children's activity area,
to like great green open spaces where children could just run and play.
Exactly. So one of the things they're suggesting is a children's activity. Like, my kids go to that. Like, we live in a tiny house with a patch of, you know, concrete out the back. So the Phoenix Park is really important to us and it's free. So one of the suggestions is a kids activity area. And when I read that, I was like, well, that's a park. That's just like, that's a tree. That's like a patch of grass. Like, my kids go and we go on a stick hunt. That's like our thing. We go on a stick hunt and that's like literally just walking around picking, like, he's four. So we walk around, pick up sticks and hit each other. That's a kid's activity. So, there's a kids activity center and then there's a lot of visitors pavilions. So there's one at each gate proposed. There's, two on the avenue, you know, that kind of great grand avenue as you come in from, let's say near Houston, if you're coming from Houston Station, that gate.
Chesterfield Avenue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Chesterfield Avenue. And then they're doing things like, there's a suggestion of redeveloping all the existing historic buildings. And one of the things which I've noticed,
I look forward to a Starbucks opening.
Well, look, this is the thing. At the time, people were kind of saying, look, we're not suggesting that there's going to be a Topshop in here. And do I think there's going to be like a Topshop or a supermarket inside in the Phoenix Park? No, I don't. Mm. Do I think Avoca is going to be in the Phoenix Park? Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, so
I do think that that's what's going to happen. I mean, that's what they're driving at.
That's where it is. They're in Malahide Castle. They're in these areas. And that becomes a for-profit model.
Exactly.
And we know where this leads. So it also reminds me of the Hellfire Club movement of, you know, this idea of here's one of the most interesting and historical sites in the Dublin mountains. And we're like, oh, yeah, let's get a cable car and a visitor centre and a restaurant.
Yeah.
And you like that. You know very much that this is what happens. And as Martin, the very first point, and you both make it very well, is we actually should be embracing green spaces.
Exactly. Look, that's the second thing, is that the whole slant of this document is about monetizing the park and about retail opportunities. And there's language in it around like the Dublin brand and can we identify products that would be in the park that would align with the Dublin brand? And it's just, you know, there's a thing, because obviously I have a background in like the construction industry, and when you see development documents, like people tend to think of development documents as something that's kind of nebulous and kind of descriptive, but you have to be so careful about them. And there's so much inaccurate language in this that maybe the OPW do have the best of intentions, but in 10 years time, the amount of inaccurate language in that proposal means that somebody could build Starbucks and they could use the document to leverage that.
Well, if you read a sentence that says that, and you can interpret it to say that this was the original implication of what that said. And that's very clear. And I would be more cynical. I would say sometimes they use words that are vague enough,
ambiguous enough
to allow that sort of stuff to happen.
Well, what does retail opportunities mean?
Yeah.
So retail opportunities could mean Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Now, it could also mean a cafe that's locally owned, because we're all starting to talk about like neighborhood wealth and local wealth.
But you're talking about...
it could also mean Avoca, and I don't consider that a local owner.
You're talking about a Fine Gael government. Never mind that, Martin.
You're talking about Avoca, who also cater for a lot of direct provision centers.
Exactly.
I'm not okay with this.
I'm struck with there's a song keeps going around in my head. It's like, we paved paradise and put up a parking lot. You know?
Well, look, that's the third thing, is that even if you stripped out that idea of monetizing the park and taking our public spaces and looking at them just purely in terms of profit, which I have and you can see that happening throughout the city, of monetizing our public space. And for people on low incomes, that's a huge problem. The third issue then is that the actual plan itself, you know, if you just strip out the retail opportunities, it's just not green enough, right? So, like what they've done is they've suggested that you break up the park into four zones, I think of it is, and only one of them is called biodiversity. The other one is about commemoration. The other one is about activity. But to me, it's so rare to have this like Dublin is quite unique in that we have places like the Phoenix Park and we have St. Anne's. Mm. So we have about the average amount of green space, but it's all siloed into huge big areas.
Yes.
So actually, if you live in the centre of Dublin, you don't necessarily have as much access to green space as somebody who's living in Vienna or somebody who's living in Berlin, because the Phoenix Park and St. Anne's are huge, but they're all one thing. So you don't have like little parks all over the place.
But isn't there a real arrogance to saying that something that we've had, something that was gifted to the Irish people, that at this particular moment in time, those people who now can make decisions feel that they can discard everything that went past, everything that might be future, and that they can make decisions on it right now to suit themselves.
Well, this is it exactly. And that set of decisions will impact the park for generations.
Yes.
If we start building in the park now, and, you know, the park should actually be a wild place. They're doing it backwards.
Yeah.
So they should be talking about how do we rewild the Phoenix Park? How do we make it a place where, you know, the human aspect is kind of like it's a little minimal trail that you can kind of go around and, you know, you can find yourself in nature. Like that's the point of having a huge park. Mm. That's the opportunity. And let us have like little pocket parks throughout the city.
And I want to say, just again, for listeners' benefits, just to think about this. If this happens in the Phoenix Park, these things set a template as well. It will be green spaces everywhere. I mean, in London, they refer to it as pay for play, where councils have essentially privatized public spaces, where if a child wants to go on a swing, there's actually fees for some of these now.
Yeah.
And like, if we open the door to it, that actually then, like, it's creating a market. It's creating a market where there was none. And that is very much a mentality here, you know?
I mean, look, and that can happen in a number of ways, because we tend to think of it as like, oh, I'm going to put my 20 cent in the slot.
Yeah.
But there's other ways of doing that. So if you set up, let's say, a little coffee dock or an ice cream, that looks great, right? But for someone like me, up until recently, I'm making the big bucks at the council, my 17 grand a year now. But up until recently, I'm living on carer's allowance.
Yeah.
And we have a very specific food budget. And I don't go to parks where there's an ice cream van, because I can't keep saying to the kids, no,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so it's like libraries, right? You have to be really careful about not monetizing things that are free. And I can tell you, people on low incomes know exactly where they can go that's free. Mm. And the idea that mentality would encroach on the Phoenix Park is really a problem. And there's a lot of people on low incomes living around the Phoenix Park. You know, you've people like O'Devney Gardens, you've people in Cabra. Like, there's a lot of people who need, like, space. They need green.
The entire North Circular Road, which
exactly.
That entire community, as someone who rented a flat in it, knows full well that this is where, and the Phoenix Park is one of Dublin's finest outlets for everybody.
You go up on a Sunday, on a fine Sunday, and there are gangs of people having picnics, from huge big groups to little small groups, all over the park.
Yeah.
It is such an amenity for people as it stands right this minute. Mm.
Yeah.
So why fix what's not broken?
I mean, look, I think there's an issue, and I think the OPW, it's a wider problem. You know that they've banned barbecuing in the park.
Yeah.
Which yeah. I just think, like, that in itself, it is symptomatic. Like, across Europe, you can camp in parks. Like, a park the size of Phoenix Park, you would be, because I've done it in Germany with school friends, is that they would encourage, like, school kids to barbecue and camp.
Sadly, people are camping in the Phoenix Park, but that's just because of the housing crisis.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't want to draw attention to it, but I see it as Martin gives out to me. Oh, there's Tony. It was virtue signaling jogging.
So how do we alter this? How do we, okay, straight,
push
how
back.
Do you stop this?
Well, I mean, look, we have to keep an eye at a very basic level on that document and how it emerges. Hopefully, we wrote an observation on that document, and hope. And as I said, I think about, well, that particular document, other people did their own observation, but 4,200 people signed ours. And I'm very wary that document would become like a published document with little change, because once they exist, it's very difficult to argue against them. I can tell you, you know, having worked in that industry, once there's some kind of a development plan, I'll give you an example, actually, because I was talking to somebody about this recently, and it's a Limerick example, I'm sorry. But there's an opera site, that's what it's called in Limerick, where they're redeveloping a full block of the city centre, and there's some historic buildings on it, but a lot of it's going to be offices. Really, it should be all housing, but however, anyway. And they're going to put a big tower on it, right? And we were trying to work out why is this tower going in? Because towers are not necessarily, you know, from an architect's point of view, they're not great profit-wise.
No.
And they're not great in terms of spatial use because, you know, they create shadows and, you know, so I'm not anti-tower, but like, you have to be quite careful where you put them. And we worked out that the reason they're putting it is because the original development draft development plan had an image in it that had a view out over the river and there was a tower on the site. And it's not mentioned in any of the written words of the document. And I can tell you, as somebody who has worked on those plans in the past, like, that was some student, like, on a rainy Thursday, was told by their boss, would you do up a perspective there of Limerick that looks nice for the front cover?
Yeah.
And he did it, and he stuck a tower on it because, like, he's a student or she's a student and it doesn't matter. But that's now going to get built. There's now going to be a tower there because some random person in an office, probably in like London or something.
Is there any way we could draw things on housing first perspectives, Tony?
Yeah.
Just me and you, we just put loads of social housing on them.
But that's what I mean about like development plans. You can think that they're fuzzy and that they're advisory.
Yeah, yeah.
But once they exist, they can be the catalyst for stuff, and you have to be really, really careful. So the first thing is to keep a very hard, a very close eye on how that document is. But also, I think there is a wider issue with the OPW. And look, the Green Party have been kind of flagging this, but I don't know if you've seen what they did with the Bandon River. But they're stripping out rivers, and they're being quite, you know, they're doing a lot of flood mitigation in a way that we would consider not flood mitigation and quite problematic. I think that they do need to look at their, I've looked on their website. I don't see that they have particularly a charter on biodiversity or a position on nature. And a lot of their activity is quite hard on those issues and not helpful. And, you know, things like hedge cutting, and there is an issue there with the OPW.
Well, it's interesting because we had Luke Neal from the Shropshire Wildlife Trust in, who talked about natural flood defences and how they managed to do it for a fraction of the cost of as what you would call, what you're talking about in terms of putting concrete down and doing these things. That
walling rivers and stripping out riverbanks is flood defences from 30 years ago.
Yeah, and the guys in the Shropshire Wildlife Trust, what they found is in terms of...
go upstream, plant it.
Climate mitigation, carbon capture, climate carbon sequestering, all of that things improved.
Around, I know we're talking about the Bandon, but for example, around the Shannon now, that's such a long river and it's, you know, there's so much land involved in that. And there's all sorts of things like Ardna Crush and everything that complicate issues. You need to, you know, be very careful what you're doing there. And in terms of like stripping back land and attacking, riverbanks and things. And I'm not sure that in Ireland we're having that thoughtful conversation and that careful, like kind of almost surgical, like dealing with flood mitigation. So there's a larger issue there around the OPW, and they own a lot of land.
Mm. You know? Yes, they do own a lot of land.
And a lot of historic buildings.
Yeah, they do. It, like apart from some extra loos and don't cut the grass so much, the Phoenix Park doesn't really need a whole lot.
Like there, look, I have a big interest in kind of pedestrian issues. And I would say that there's some kind of soft design stuff that the Phoenix Park could really benefit from. Better crossings, stuff like water fountains, right? Mm. And also stuff like benches. So we are terrible in Ireland for this idea that like people can walk for 20 minutes. I mean, again, going back to bus connects, that's one of the problems is that if you change all the buses and people have to walk 10 minutes, where are our benches? Because if you're, you know, an older person, you need to sit down like every 8 minutes or 5 minutes and rest. And actually, we don't provide hardly any rest spaces.
Well, we've stripped them out of the city centre as well because
God forbid anyone sleep on them.
They didn't, there's that element, and there's also the retail element of not wanting, they want people on their feet as well.
Yeah. And look, there's also the element of we don't want to pay to maintain them. It's like bins. We don't want to pay to pick up the bins. And in fairness, local government probably don't have a huge amount of finance to do that. So instead of thinking about, well, should we ask central government for more funding for that, we're just stripping them out.
But to accommodate these changes that they're thinking of putting into the Phoenix Park, you're looking at major construction works within the Phoenix Park, very major construction works. And at the present moment in time, that's an artery in and out of the city through the Phoenix Park. I mean, the disruption on top of destroying what already exists as a great biodiversity habitat, they're going to pour tons and tons of concrete and block the traffic. It just sounds disaster all around.
I mean, that is absolutely true. And I think that we don't always consider that when we're making decisions about these big projects, about the 5 or 6 years where there's going to be a huge amount of disruption.
Well, you know where we're sitting. Like what are we 500 meters from Nafina, where they were, and it was, that pitch was going, this pitch is going, and the reason it didn't go, and I on hand on heart, is because it was in Glasnevin, in constituency of where Pascal Donoghue and Mary Lou MacDonald and all of these people have.
If they wanted to run it through East Wall, no, nothing would have gotten in the way. You know, it's that simple.
Yeah,
but that was, you know, I hate to be so flippant, but there's a harsh reality there.
Well, it's not like we haven't seen that played out before with the extension of the lines on the south side. We haven't seen people have brought power to bear to stop them. Yeah. Can you imagine that? I'm still dumbfounded by that.
Well, I mean, the thing is that we're going to have to get serious. I mean, like there will be some disruption. We need, for example, we need bus connects and we need the metro. And there will be disruption, but I think we need to be honest about that disruption and talk about how that's going to impact people in the 5 years. Like for a child now, for example, to go for 5 years with banging and pounding and, you know, pollution in the air and all that kind of stuff, particularly in a park. Like let's talk about that. Is that worth that?
Well, if we were really honest and long-term about public transport, particularly in the city, in Dublin, you'd be saying, why don't we have an underground, you know?
Well, why don't we have a congestion charge?
Yeah, well, you've got to...
Can we start there?
Well, I think before you even hit congestion charge, you've got to have alternative modes of transport to get into the city.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it all fails. If you can't... I mean, I live out in Ashbourne and there's, you know, buses. That's it. Yep. Bus in, bus out. So where do you get to cycle? I'd love to be able to cycle into the city, but, you know, how do you?
Have you ever seen the old network of rail across Ireland?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is the next big... And you never hear anybody talking about that.
Well, it's stunning when you look at the rail that used to be up in Donegal.
When they overlap the two maps, it's always that, what
Well, it's
do?
Like it's like they just cut off Donegal and said, adios, there you see.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys.
And it's a funny thing about, let's say, the greenways now, because, like, the greenways are so brilliant, but sometimes they're on old rail lines, which makes total sense.
Quite often.
If you're never going to use the rail again. But there's always a bit of me that thinks, guys, hang on a second now. Mm. The greenways are fantastic, but sometimes they're mostly for, like, sometimes they're really just for tourists.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of think, well, actually, from an environmental point of view, the less pretty rail line would probably have much more impact in terms of our carbon.
Yeah.
Than putting in the greenway. So, like, I think that whole thing around rail, I know Metro is part of that, but you know, kind of city to city big rail and it has to be electric, of course.
Particularly given, we've talked Dublin very predominantly here, but in other cities of Cork, if it is a city, Cork, Galway, Limerick.
Tweets about that.
But Cork, Galway, Limerick, these places, public transport is a nightmare.
Oh, ridiculous.
It's like a nightmare. Galway comes to a complete standstill if someone coughs on the Lochatalia Road. It's just insane. All of these places, they need the infrastructure. And, you know, we've seen the government's climate action plan. We've seen that they're going to now look at the 2040 plan and try and carbon proof it. And now
I know, but the 2040 plan is 2 years old. Mm. I mean... The Green Party's been going for 30 years. We knew. I mean, I don't mean that in a kind of we told you so way, but...
Oh, you do.
No, but I mean, come on. The 2040 plan wasn't carbon costed.
Yeah.
It's only 2 years old.
I know, yeah.
I know.
I mean...
It wasn't built in.
But they only learned...
crazy.
But they only learned about climate emergency 6 months ago.
Oh, no.
6 weeks ago after the European elections.
No, but I mean, even now with their new climate plan and I feel bad, like, slagging people off who I presume are trying, right? Because you kind of feel like, well,
but they're back to market. They're back to market solutions.
Exactly. And if you look at, like, their thing about electric cars, electric cars are not the future. I think that there is an argument to be made for people who are experiencing carbon lock-in. So, for example, if you live, like, in the middle of nowhere, because that's where you could get your planning permission, and you know, have all your own kind of building services, you have your septic tank and everything, you will find it very, very difficult to cut your carbon impact. And so you should have access to really good grants on electric cars, on EV charging, and on, micro renewables in your home. And that's because you'll find it very difficult to change, and you should be helped to do the right thing. And it should be easy for you to do the right thing. Like, all of this should be to make it easier for you to be green than to do anything else. But electric cars are not the future for the vast majority of people in Ireland who now live in urban areas. So it should be that you're looking at your car going, what a waste of money. That's where we need to be. And it's cheaper for me. Like, I'm in Cabra, so the Lewis is there now, and we're in the process now. Because we have a disabled child, we still have a car, but we're in the process of going to get rid of it and go to Go Car, because we really only need it when she's going to her random occupational therapy in Lucan or wherever it might be.
And isn't that something I've seen just in the last couple of weekends, that would say a major hospital like Beaumont, which is centre of excellence, yet the catchment area, such as Swords, has no direct bustling to Beaumont.
Exactly.
And you're thinking, oh my God, how crazy is that? You have to go all the way into town and all the way back out again to get to Beaumont.
But it has to be the easy thing. It has to be the easy thing that's good for you. Because, I'm not naive. People aren't going to do it because they kind of existentially feel bad about the planet. That's not going to work. It's like, my parents got rid of Netflix this weekend. They asked me to cancel it for them. You're cancelling Netflix? Like, that's crazy. And he said, well, I don't use it. I mean, there's no point in me paying for it when I'm not. That should be your car. your car should be sitting outside and you're just thinking, what a way, why am I paying for insurance?
Mm.
You know, that's where we need to get to. And that is going to be bus and rail.
Yeah.
For the vast majority of people who don't live in the middle of nowhere. No. And for the people who do, we can help them.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, there's no, I have no excuse. Martin knows I'm cycling in and out and I'm laughing to myself going, but at the same time, you're sitting there and you're going, yeah, but I have that there for the weekend or whatever. Or
well,
whatever
I think too, from where Tony is here, the access to town is great. Mm. You can actually cycle into town from here.
Although it's a bit scary coming here to like Hart's Corner.
Yeah.
I have never once properly cycled Hart's Corner. I always get off and walk because I'm too scared.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that's not right either.
But I mean, the limit is the M50. That's the limit. You know, anywhere within the M50, you can really cycle. Okay, it might take you 40 minutes, but you can still do it. You can cycle into the city centre. But once you go outside the M50, then you don't have that option.
Yeah.
You are then stuck to either car, bus.
Yeah.
Or if you're lucky enough to be on a rail line.
And I think actually one of the things that's worth pointing out is that Fine Gael idea that we'll just get, you know, have however 600,000 or whatever, what is it? I can't even think what the number was of electric cars.
And million.
It's just that one option.
Hmm.
And actually, if you look at the places that are doing it well in Europe, they do everything.
Yeah.
So it's not bus connects or the metro. It's bus connects and the metro and the cycle lanes and good footpaths. We always forget about footpaths, good footpaths and good benches. And it's everything. And it's about like a hugely integrated system
think about their, sorry Neil, to cut across you, but think about their plan for, zero emission energy and I think 30% of that is made up of imported, we'll buy our energy in, which is actually the carbon is burning in the UK that we're buying.
Or it's LPG and fracked.
And we're saying as if to say, but because we bought it from them, it's their issue. And you're going, same, we all live on the same planet, folks. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So there's a lot of this where, it's, as I said, it's market solutions. It's not exactly putting people at the centre of it. And if we've learned anything from doing these podcasts is that we need a people-based society, a rights-based society, and not a market-led one. You know.
Well, this is it. And I think at its very core, in the next few years, we're going to have to start talking about who profits from and has access to our resources. Right. And that'll make the trot in the room happy, right? But that's basically what it comes down to. And I, of course, people like me are coming from it from an angle of it's not the worker at the center of that. It's the worker plus, you know, the planet at the center of that.
Yes.
But what it means is that there's a huge outside influence that's pushing us now to system change, to reorganize our systems. And at the very center of that should be kind of, you know, equity and equality. And that's a massive opportunity. So from my perspective, so much is going to have to change that, you know, those kind of vulnerable groups or diverse groups in society have to be at the very center of. That's why I kind of worry sometimes about that discussion around the carbon tax, where we'll make rich people pay. My worry there is that if that becomes the conversation, then it'll be designed to suit them.
It is.
It will be. It will be. And I have spent the last few years like at home, right? No access to childcare, no access to like a really bad health system. And to me, the fact that our society is now, whether we like it or not, is going to have to reorganize itself means that we could create system change there and vulnerable groups and women particularly and, you know, kids, children, they should be at the very, very center of all of that.
I'm glad to see that I am winning so many people around to my view on carbon tax.
Your deeply cynical view.
No, it is my view on carbon tax, that a carbon tax that isn't also a wealth tax is not going to work. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
It's only going to penalize one section of society.
I suppose maybe I am naive, but I see it as an opportunity.
I do too, if it's a wealth tax as well.
That this is exactly, the podcast went out today, if anybody's heard it, with Dr. Niall Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman.
Yeah.
And he actually said this was an opportunity as well, at the bottom where we are now. He said this is an opportunity where we can say, we can see the intersectionality of mental health, this health service, the climate, the homeless issue, and link it all together and say, we need to build a better society where in 5 years to 10 years there is a minimum floor that people won't fall below anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and, exactly.
You know, listen, let's go check it out. It was a great pub, but I just sat there and I thought to myself going, well, you know what? He's dead right. There's an opportunity there. Yeah. So you're not naive. We just need more people thinking like that.
I do a lot of kind of reading around universal basic income and all that kind of stuff. But what I do know is this, the current system, and the way everything works right now doesn't suit me. It doesn't work for me. You know, my kids aren't looked after by this system. Particularly now having a child with a disability. She has something like, if you are visually impaired, you have something like a 16% chance of ever having long-term employment. And she's much more likely to be lower income. She's much more likely to be homeless. Like the system doesn't work for people like us. So I'm not a kind of a burn it to the ground person, but I am like, let's change it. Maybe burn it a little bit
to the ground. Yeah, just a little bit of it.
I always go back to remember the day we had Dean Scurry in Ballymun's finest, Dean Scurry, and he just grabbed the mic and he shouted, well, the doll gate shut.
With them inside or outside?
No, they were on summer recess at the time. And he said, now that they're out, he basically said, close it.
And not that I think it would make a whole lot of difference whether they were in or out, you know. But can I bring it back to the park?
Yeah.
What are the actions that can be taken right now? What can people do right now to have an impact on this?
Well, you can contact the OPW and continue to ask about it. Even though that process has closed now, it closed at the end of May. I think it's unacceptable that wasn't online.
Okay.
When we asked them about that, they said, it was too long a document. Now, it's 2019. I don't know what the problem is with putting a 100-page document online, because I could do it on a free website.
Yeah.
I mean, if they want, and I had three kids with me when I was down in the visitor center, so I was trying to like snap photos of this 100-page document. But I'm sure that there's somebody out there who would scan it for you guys if you want to put. So the OPW has to put that document online, and you can continue to contact them and write to them and ask them to put that document online. I think that there's a wider issue around the OPW and their responsibility to nature and their responsibility to sustainable biodiversity and all that kind of stuff. So, I think we're probably going to organize ourselves and kind of do something in terms of calling on them to state their position, a proper public consultation.
At the
minimum, this needs to become a proper public consultation and adhere to all the requirements of a proper public consultation. I don't even know what a public information session is. Like, what is that? There was no meeting, you know.
Well, it's we're going to do this, and we're now informing you that we're going to do this.
Pretty much, it's a fait accompli, and they were hoping that it would be done and dusted.
It's a planning permission. Signpost, that's all that is, man.
Yeah, you know,
like some of the, I want to go local county council first time in the door. It's going to be an interesting few term. I know we've seen the breakup. I know we've seen the makeup of the new councils and how they're finding themselves in the committees. How are you finding it so far?
It's been interesting. You know, when you start a new job and you kind of go into the new job and you think, well, why is this working like this? Or I don't understand why this works this way. I am kind of a results-based person. I like to know what we want to do and how we're going to get there. And the council does seem kind of convoluted. And obviously, I very much think that local government has been hollowed out in Ireland. And I think that some of the way having been at a couple of meetings now, I think that some of the way it's structured is a function of how hollowed out it is. And so, I mean, I'm learning and, I think there's stuff that maybe I'm not quite up to speed on yet, if I'm honest.
You're going to resist cutting the grass and picking up dog shit, I presume. You're going to resist dragging it into the gutter. I mean,
the only thing I would say about dog shit is if you have a child who uses a white cane, I'm telling you.
No.
Not my favorite thing. I have to disinfect her because, you know, she folds it up and she gets it on her hands.
Oh,
look, I think local government should be more than that.
Yes.
And as we were talking about with the local or with the public consultation, I think that idea that local voices are a problem or that there's something that have to be bypassed or that there's something that have to be managed. I just don't even like that idea that, you know, that they're worried about making it a public consultation. Like, the more voices, the better. Like, I'm not scared of the person on the door who only wants to talk about dog poo. That's fine. But, you know, let's get them in a room. Like, let's get everybody together. This thing of like trying to bypass all these people.
But then your opinion would be asked for. And if your opinion is asked for, the fait accompli isn't so fait accompli, you know?
Yeah.
And there's where the problem lies. Somebody made this decision, arbitrary decision. As you said, there's a marriage of inconvenience there between the OPW and Bord Fáilte. And that, I mean, that's, I'm going to say it straight out, that's a bit smelly, that is, isn't it? It's just a little bit smelly.
Well, I think that the OPW, W's remit should and has to be different from Fáilte Ireland. Like, I don't see how those two things can dovetail happily in a way that's responsible for the park.
I mean, do we really need to have a leprechaun in a shamrock hat?
I don't know what they had planned. I totally get like Fáilte Ireland being inside in the zoo. Because that's like, you know, that's explicitly a tourist thing.
Yeah, it's great.
But God, the park should be a wild place. Like, you know, where are my wildflowers? Like, where is my, where are my meadows? You know, they just talk about like, oh, we don't mow so much anymore. Like, guys, can we be a bit more ambitious? Like, they're introducing wolves in across Europe, you know. Like, I'm not saying to do that in the Phoenix Park. I'm
there
talking
is,
about
there,
like,
there is a suggestion that we should reintroduce wolves in Ireland.
I'm totally up for it. Let's do it. Well,
now, I want the wild boar.
I have been in Cork and I can tell you that, that's probably already happening. That's twice in this pod. I'm going to get it.
No, I have to say, thanks very much. Us Dubs have been a bit slow off the mark on this one. It took somebody to come up from Limerick and show us.
It was the Navan Road people there.
And show us the error of our ways. No, we've been slow, but we are very good even from a slow start. We come back. The Dubs, we do have.
Listen, the amount that people love the Phoenix Park.
Yeah, love it.
The level of kind of genuine love for the Phoenix Park. Like, oh, I walked through whatever gate to get to school, or you know, I went down there with my parents, or like, people feel ownership over that park. And I think if the OPW and Fáilte Ireland think that they can go in there and stick in a huge avoca or whatever they have planned, I'm not sure that that's gonna fly.
So there's more to life than the Mars Bar cakes, kids.
I mean, there's always Merrion Park if they want to stick in an avoca. I mean, it fit in nicely in Merrion Park, but leave the Phoenix Park alone, for God's sakes. Thanks again for coming in and having a chat with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been really nice. Could chat on this one for quite a bit, but I think we might have to have you back in the future to discuss
definitely
how we stopped it all and how the Phoenix Park is now a great eco-culture, and there's so many people going to visit it and they don't even need a visitor centre.
Fantastic. Sounds good to me.
Thanks for listening, folks. Head on over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Get us the price of a cup of coffee. It'll help me get Martin's, he wants wax for the head now. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.